What's going on, everybody? This is your host, Josh Bass, and you are listening to a Sunday evening, Monday morning edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, depending on when Gavin gets this up. Going solo again here today, like the Clean Bandit Demi Lovato song, which has been my jam over the past few months. No Gavin here. I'm going streaking, staying by myself. We'll see how long that lasts. He should be joining us over the next episode or two, but we're going to get into a couple Nets games here. Honestly, completely going to dismiss the loss to the Heat because I didn't watch that game, and based on the box score and the Twitterverse, it didn't seem like I missed anything positive, so we'll completely avoid that and pretend the Nets only played 81 games this year, and then discuss a very promising win over the Wizards, 115-104, and then a loss to the Clippers, 127-119, where the Nets blew a 7-10 point lead that they held for most of the game. Disappointing, but I think a lot of positives that we can take away. So we'll break all that down next.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Let's get into it. Let's first talk about the Wizards game, which I was very impressed with. I think that big takeaways from the last couple games has been D'Angelo Russell's, I think, starting to figure it out. And I've panned the guy, but it looks like he's playing really well. His turnovers are going down. I think he's making good decisions with the basketball. And for me, his swing skill has always been, listen, he's never going to be an explosive athlete. He's always going to struggle on defense. He's always going to struggle getting into the lane just because he doesn't have that burst. But if he can become a dead-eye three-point shooter, especially off the catch, then he has a chance to be a good offensive player overall. And at the point guard position, you have to be a good offensive player. So that's been his swing skill for me. And he's shooting 41% from three this year on over six attempts a game. Great volume. Off the catch, he's been very good. Hitting some difficult attempts off the dribble. So I've been pretty impressed with him. And he's a guy coming into the draft I thought was going to be an excellent three-point shooter and has really struggled so far in his career. I mean, 35% his first two seasons in LA isn't terrible. Dropped down to 32% his first year in Brooklyn, but you never got the sense that he was just one step away from figuring it all out just because he had some inconsistencies with his form, didn't get a ton of lift on his shot. But he's looking good. You know, I hate to say it, but I think that if he keeps it up, I don't know. I hate to say it because I love when the Nets do well, and he's really impressed me. But I think that there could be a situation where Spencer Dinwiddie might not be on this team if D'Lo plays well, just because Sean Marks and Kenny Atkinson might decide, say, hey, Russell's our guy. Let's see what we can get from Dinwiddie on the open market. And I would hate that just because I think Spencer Dinwiddie, him and Joe Harris both are kind of synonymous with this Nets culture and development because two guys taken out of nowhere. I mean, both were really good college players, but I mean, Joe Harris on the Cavs was kind of, he didn't do anything. Dinwiddie on the Pistons was best known for eating the, was it like a Snickers bar or a protein bar on the bench? So I feel like they've come out and become really good role players. Joe Harris got paid last offseason, 2 years, $16 million. Dinwiddie's going to get paid in the offseason, whether it's by the Nets or by someone else. They can offer him an extension, but both D'Lo and Spencer were awesome in that Wizards game, combined for 48 points. Both were very efficient from the field. Spencer, 8 assists, 1 turnover. He was just making some really high-level reads to Jarrett Allen. So I think his pick-and-roll passing has gotten really good. There's some times where the accuracy of his passes struggles a little bit. It's either off-target, and when you have some shooters like Damari Carroll or Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, especially Rondae, who can be very inconsistent, you need to give him the ball exactly in the pocket or else he has no chance of kind of setting himself back up and knocking it down. So great performance by the Nets. I thought that Jarrett Allen was good, 16 points, 12 rebounds. I mean, Dwight Howard got his numbers. He had 25 and 17, but I feel like Dwight got his numbers at the expense of everyone else on the Wizards team, just kind of forcing the ball down low, playing volleyball off the backboard. The Wizards, how are they so bad? I really don't understand this because Bradley Beal is one of my favorite players. I really like Otto Porter. I think Kelly Oubre has gotten so much better since he came into the league. Even Satoransky And Austin Rivers are decent off the bench, but just something about this team doesn't work, and they need to make a trade. And whether that's with the Nets, maybe the Nets have interest in Otto Porter again. Can they trade John Wall? I really have no idea who would want him. I mean, I guess I could see Phoenix taking a swing on him, saying, hey, now we're going to have the all Kentucky backcourt and let's see what we can do there. And John Wall's still only 28. He's putting up good numbers, 21-8, but he's just not the same player he once was. I think early on in his career, he locked down as a defender. And when his offensive game was still developing, especially his mid-range and his three-pointer, he made his hat on defense. And he's still a really good passer, but he just doesn't have the same burst. I remember there was a play a couple seasons ago against the Knicks where he got the rebound and someone was trying to foul him mid-court, and he just went around them with a sick crossover and dunked it. And like, he doesn't make those flashy plays anymore. And it sucks because I feel like when I started really getting into college basketball, it was like when he was at the limelight in Kentucky, and him, Cousins, Bledsoe, that team was so awesome. And now to see he's kind of like, he's not washed, but he's not what he once was. It's sad to see. So let's get John Wall on a good team. And maybe that's because John Wall has to commit again and get back in good shape and not be a cancer in the locker room. But the him, Beal, Otto Porter trio doesn't work anymore. And it's so weird also not seeing Gortat on that team, because I felt like he was synonymous, especially when I went to Maryland and go to Wizards games. Like, you know you're going to get those 10 Gortat illegal screens per game that are never called, and he did the same thing against against the Nets when he was with the Clippers last night. But, you know, I don't know. Washington needs to figure it out, and I think Grunfeld should probably get fired, but who knows? Maybe if they want to trade Beal, the Nets would be a taker for that. So other highlights in this game, I thought Kuritz continues to impress me. I cannot believe how good this guy is. He always knows where to be, super active on the offensive glass, had that one really nice tip-in where on first blush, it looked exactly like it was going to be offensive goaltending. They showed the replay, actually wasn't, so insane timing by him to get that tip-in. I think Kuritz he needs to play. I mean, he played 21 minutes against the Wizards, didn't play against the Clippers because Rondé was back, but he's someone that needs time, and whether that means that Dudley has to take a seat, so be it. Or the Nets make a trade, either getting rid of Dudley, Damari, or RHJ. They have to do something, because Kuritz might be, I think Damari's probably the best four on the team, and then Kuritz might be the best fit at this point, just because he's a pretty decent three-point shooter, moves really well off the ball, good cutter, and pretty active defensively. So I really like this guy. I think huge steal for Sean Marks in the draft, getting Kuritz. And even if Musa doesn't pan out, you still got a guy in Kuritz at number 40 who could be a late first round value at the very least from what we're seeing. And it's been a couple games only, so shouldn't get too excited, but you know what, I am, so you guys just have to deal with it. Other highlight, Crab was terrible. I mean, he rebounded a little bit in the Clippers game, knocking down a couple shots, but I just don't see it with this guy. And is there any way that we could, maybe, I'm trying to think who would want him. It's probably something where he would have to get traded for someone with a worse contract, but maybe a better player, like an Otto Porter type. I don't know if Washington would want to do that, just because I think Porter's a guy that can fit in on pretty much any team and do a decent job. And Crab, he just struggles with his confidence. And Kenny Atkinson just pumps him up so much. And I'm like, does he really believe that? Because Crab's just abysmal right now. 1 of 6 for 3 from him. Not his best game, to say the least. This was a pretty vanilla game. It was more that the Wizards were so incompetent, and D'Lo, Dinwiddie, Kuritz, Allen just all did a really nice job. So I think it never really got close. I mean, the Nets have always had those games where they're up by 10, 15, and even when they win, they still scare you, and the lead drops to 2 or 3 points. It just didn't happen with the Wizards. They were so checked out. John Wall had that vicious flagrant foul on Spencer Dinwiddie going to the basket. And RJ was talking on the broadcast saying that Spencer needs to know not to go to the basket and just pull up from three. I mean, it was still a minute left in the game. What is he going to just chuck it? I don't know. I think it's fine to go to the basket. And it's not like the Wizards are this team that demands so much respect, because they're basically not even trying for Scottie Brooks right now. So why should Spencer give them the respect and not try to take it to the basket? So dirty play by Wall. Upsetting to see that. But the Wizards need to make a trade, whether that be reuniting Markieff Morris on the Celtics with Marcus or just something, because this is a really talented team, but they just suck the fun out of basketball. So I'm sure a bunch of other national media guys are already talking about this, but I would like to see one of those guys get traded, and maybe it will be to the Nets, just because the Wizards and Nets always seem to make something happen. But we shall see. Okay, we'll take another break, and after that, we'll talk about the Nets-Clippers games and that disappointing loss. We're back, segment three, on the Locked On Nets podcast. Josh Bass going solo today. You know, what does Gavin say in this segment? Rate us, review us, follow us, tweet at us. We need more fan involvement. And that's most of the fault is placed on us, because we don't really do anything. We're both very busy. I think Gavin is. He at least says he is to me, so I'll take him at face value. I know I am. But we need to do more for you guys. So tweet at us. Say, what can we do to make this a more engaging experience? Maybe take some of your email questions and do more on Reddit. But we're going to start thinking through, as the holiday season comes around, how we can make 2019 the best year ever for Locked On Nets. And by best year, it's really not a high bar, because we had half of 2017, 2018, and now the upcoming 2019. But you know what? We're going to improve, just like the Nets. Incremental improvements. Or like Tobias Harris, who has made a ton of incremental improvement each season. He's a guy, I think he's someone that D'Lo could look at, say, he's a guy who's also a one and done, very highly touted high school player. I mean, was drafted in much later than Russell, but to see where he's at now from his time in Milwaukee, it's crazy. I mean, he's having a 50-40-80 season right now, really good rebounder. I know a lot of Nets fans are interested in getting him. If the Nets had either Tobias Harris or Danilo Gallinari, who, shout out to Gallo, who's had a nice career, even though things didn't necessarily pan out the way he wanted them to in New York, and he's shown a lot of promise throughout his career, but has finally put it together on Denver and now the Clippers. If they had one of those two guys in Dudley's spot, they could be a sixth seed, because both those guys are really solid players. I mean, Harris is averaging 21 points a game, and I think he's going to be a free agent this year. He's from Long Island. He's kind of like a mini Melo type. I know there was a couple of years back where the Knicks were thinking of really going after him. He's a low turnover guy, and he's just a shot maker. I think having a guy from the four spot who can run pick and roll is huge, and the Nets really don't have that now. All of their fours are more pick and pop types, but imagine a Tobias Harris, Jarrett Allen pick and roll with three guys, let's say LeVert, D'Lo, and Spencer Dinwiddie, or maybe Joe Harris in one of those spots, spacing the floor. That's super dangerous. The Nets could not stop Tobias. He had 27 points, 11 of 17 shooting. Really good game from him. I think for this one, you know, the Nets played pretty well in the first three quarters. I think the Clippers, they did a good job just kind of staying in it. And Jarrett Allen had that sick first quarter where I think he had 13 points, 6 rebounds, finished with 24 and 11. I thought he had probably his best game as a Net. But one thing I want to highlight is that his footwork has gotten so much better. He was having drop steps, a couple plays where he had really nice moves, just couldn't finish it. I think one for him to become a high-level center, there's two things he could do, one or the other. One is learn how to post up on switches, because there will be times where he has like a 6'2", 6'3 guy on him, and the Nets guards just don't feel comfortable getting him the ball, because he struggles finishing those shots, and usually it results in a hook shot. So maybe just getting stronger to be able to finish through those post-ups on smaller guys, or just finish improving his touch in general, because he has so many times where it's like he makes a great play and just can't finish the shot. So I think he's really improving. Had a really good game against the Clippers. Did a nice job on Gortat. I mean, he struggled with Montrezl Harrell, as did Ed Davis. And we'll talk about Montrezl Harrell, because that guy is a stud. He's one of the most underappreciated players in the NBA, I think, going back to his time on Houston. He's just such a strong and powerful finisher near the basket. There was one play in the fourth quarter where he got the ball. Four Nets around him. He just loads up under the basket and jumps and just powers through with a dunk over all four of them. He's really good, and he kind of changed the game. Had a couple back-to-back and-ones in the third quarter. I thought he played really well. Ed Davis couldn't contain him. I think the Nets pick-and-roll defense was awesome in the first half. I thought Spencer Dinwiddie did a really good job on defense, even though his offense was horrible. But second half, it seemed like that Kenny Atkinson made an adjustment and said, hey, now we're not going to leave the role man. Just either Joe Harris or Allen Crabb or whomever on the pick and pops just stay with him. And what it allowed was Patrick Beverley or Lou Williams to just have a free run to the basket. And when the centers, Allen and Davis, would step up, they had a wide open dump off to Montrezl Harrell. So, I mean, it's kind of pick your poison with the Clippers just because they have so many decent to very good players. And a lot of those guys can make shots, especially guys off the bench like Lou Williams and even Mike Scott, the regional manager, can knock down threes. So they're a tough team to defend. But I don't know if I loved Kenny Atkinson going with that strategy. A couple other things from this one. Joe Harris was really good. I mean, he's struggled with the shot a bit, but 19 points in this one, 4 assists, 0 turnovers, had a couple really strong takes to the basket. I thought he was awesome, continuing his strong play. D'Angelo Russell, 23 points, 10 assists, only 1 turnover, 5 of 7 from 3. A lot of what I was talking about earlier in the show about his catch-and-shoot ability, had a couple nice mid-rangers. And listen, the shots are still the same as he's always taken. It's not my favorite look, but if he's hitting it, then who am I to complain? Ed Davis, again, I love this guy. I love this guy so much. And it's just great to have a center that can really crash the boards. And 48 minutes of having someone out there who's at the very least going to be a decent rim protector and can finish around the basket. He's not a liability. He's not like a Johan Petro type. So I think it's really been a strong first 15 or so games for the offseason signings by Sean Marks. Napier, I think, you know, Napier really was the turning point in this game, I think, because when he came in at the end of the third quarter and the start of the fourth, he was just terrible, chucking up bad shots. His handle is pretty sloppy for a guy who's kind of like a New York Street type point guard, even though I know he's not from New York, but I always associate him with like the Sebastian Telfair molds. He had a couple plays where he's just losing the ball. Patrick Beverley and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander are tough to go against because they really get into you. But Shabazz needs to do a better job, so disappointing from him. Spencer Dinwiddie had a rough game. I mean, 3 of 16 from the field, 1 of 6 from 3, by far his worst game of the season. And, you know, these are going to happen for him. The one thing I will say is that I thought he was getting the right types of shots, especially in the first half. They just weren't going in. And then the second half, as happens with Spencer from time to time, he gets too frustrated with the refs. He's just driving to look for the foul call and not actually concentrating on finishing the play or seeing is there someone to pass the ball off to or a cutter or maybe an open three-point shooter. So I think he was letting the refs get in his own head. He had that offensive foul at the end of the game where he just kind of shoved. Was it Patrick Beverley or Lou Williams? One of those annoying pests on the Clippers. So Dinwiddie can't let his emotions get the best of him. He's a really smart guy. I think he'll figure it out. And he knows this. So poor game from him. I think the combination of Dinwiddie and Shabazz Napier, who were 3 of 20 from the field with 7 turnovers. I mean, it's hard to win a game when 2 of your 3 real ball handlers do that poorly. So, you know, the Nets played well, but Clippers are a good team. The Clippers are very similar to the Nets in that there's a lot of role players and there's no real star, except the Clippers role players are all better. The Nets have a ton of like 7th and 8th men. The Clippers have a lot of guys who are like 4th or 5th starters or 6 men on their team, like Tobias Harris, Danilo Gallinari, Pat Beverley are all just kind of better. Patrick Beverley is just a better version of Shabazz Napier. I know they're different types of players, but in terms of like good backup point guard is what Shabazz Napier is. Beverley is a great backup point guard and an okay starter. Same with a guy like Montrezl Harrell. He's an amazing backup. Ed Davis is just a very good backup. And maybe that's not fair to Ed Davis, but I think that the Nets, you know, they just got outclassed and they played a decent game besides Spencer and Napier. But Clippers are good. They're 10-5. Nets were coming off a back-to-back. Doc Rivers, to his credit, has done an amazing job with this team. I never thought he was the best coach when he was with the Clippers teams earlier with Chris Paul and DeAndre and Redick and Blake. Obviously won the championship with Boston, but I didn't think he did a great job with those Clippers teams, kind of recycling the old Eastern Conference garbage around, like a BJ Mullins type or Wes Johnson, whoever played one good game against him when he was with the Celtics. But he's done a really great job with this collection of role players. I mean, looking at this roster, I think he's this could be could have been a team where he's like, oh, I don't have any stars. What am I doing? And I feel like that's what Lionel Hollins would have done. Like, oh, like, you know, how can you expect me to win when I don't have any star players? But Doc's done a really good job, and I think it's a big credit to him. And they have a couple guys, I mean, a couple of veterans on the bench that didn't even play. Boban, crowd favorite, didn't get in. Milos Teodosic, who we've heard so much about and has been kind of a flop since he came to the States. So maybe let's get Milos on a different team. What about him on Phoenix? Just get Phoenix a point guard, because I need to see Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton play with someone that can actually facilitate, as opposed to a Kobo, even though we love him. And I guess who have they had? Shaq Harrison, some of these other retreads. Let's get Milos on a different team. Or maybe he's injured, because he's playing a little bit this season. What else? So I don't know how these guys like Mike Francesa and Bill Simmons can just do a 20-30 minute podcast, and in Francesa's case, do a 6-hour radio show on their own, because I'm just waiting for Gavin to jump in. I need someone to bounce ideas off of, but obviously we don't have that. Quickly on Alan Crabb, I mean, he hit the couple threes to start the game and then was pretty ice cold. Besides that, he was chucking a lot, still has plays where he'll settle for a mid-ranger, even though there's a wide-open path to the basket. If the Nets could just clone Joe Harris and then get rid of Alan Crabb, they could make the playoffs this year, because Joe Harris has gotten to a point where he's just so far superior to Crabb. But listen, you know, the Nets took a chance on Crabb. They liked his potential in Portland. Hasn't worked out. Maybe that will change. And if it doesn't, it's only one more season after this until he's off the cap sheet. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Nets podcast. We'll be back in your ears, hopefully Tuesday or Wednesday. Need to check with Gav, but the Nets play Miami on Tuesday and then Dallas on Wednesday. So hopefully they can pull out one of those games and at least give a better performance against Miami than they did earlier this week, because from what I heard, that was embarrassing. So let's not try to repeat it. Okay, again, rate, review, tweet, follow, do all the good stuff that we know and love. And thank you guys for supporting us. I know it's been a slow couple weeks, but we will try to double our content that we're throwing out right now, and give us some feedback. Thanks.